Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Insight into Healing. My name is Alexa Servadidio, and I am your host. I have such a special guest for us tonight. On the line, I have Greg Loomis. He's a lifelong resident of Westchester County. He is 56 years of age, a husband and a father of two boys, a brother-in-law, an uncle to many nephews and nieces. He has owned his own business for 30 years. He's also a survivor of attempted suicide and lives with bipolar disorder. He recently has had the privilege to join the board of the Westchester chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. AFSP is the leading foundation in the fight against suicide. They fund research, create educational programs, advocate for public policy, and support survivors of suicide loss. Greg, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Hi, Alexa. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Great. I know I recently had went to one of the walks that you were a part of for suicide prevention. Give us a little bit of background about how you were involved in this.
It's really quite a story. It was almost a sign from the universe. In my recovery, I started to exercise a lot more because I found that it was healing for me, and it just helped me to be with myself and think about things and understand. And I took up running, and I used to run a lot. And one of the places I used to run at work, instead of lunch hour, I go down to this park where I work, and I would run around. There's a duck pond, and there's an oval, and it's just about a mile, and I jog around the oval. And one day I was jogging, and I saw this sign that said advertising for the Out of Darkness Walk for American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and it had their website. So I took it down. I went back to my office. I looked it up, and I said to my wife, I said, you know what? I think I want to go to this walk. I just feel I should be giving back after everything that that I've gone through and all the support and help I've gotten from everybody, from friends and family and professionals, et cetera. So I looked it up, and we went to the walk, and by some unbelievable instance, some friends of ours who had lost their son to, he died by suicide about a year before that, were there. And we started talking, and they were shocked to see we were there, and they wanted to know why, and we explained to them what I went through. So it was almost like divine intervention, and I met the director of AFSP Westchester chapter, and she unfortunately had lost two siblings to suicide as well. And we talked, and then I just started getting a little bit involved with some of the events, the walks and things. And lo and behold, one day she asked me if I would like to become a member of the board of Westchester. And I went to their meeting and talked about it, and here I am today.
Wow. How long did it take you to build up the strength, build up the courage to come forward? Because I know with some of the clients that I work with in my private practice and in the clinic, there's some guilt, there's some shame, there's denial. So, I mean, I really commend you for coming out and really being such a positive role model for so many people that suffer.
It was a very long journey. It was not easy. It was very difficult. It took years and years for me to come to grips with what I was suffering with and what, you know, I attempted to do. And when it first happened, I guess basically it was what they normally called, I was having a mental breakdown, a nervous breakdown. What's known today more like is what's more known today as a psychotic break. I was very depressed. I couldn't work. I couldn't operate at work. I couldn't keep attention on anything I was doing. I slept 12, 13, 14 hours a day. Sometimes I wouldn't get out of bed for 2 or 3 days. And I just was like a zombie. I couldn't think. I couldn't eat. And it was really affecting my personal life, my professional life. And then my doctor had suggested that maybe I go to a mental health clinic and go in for a evaluation and a rest. And I said, okay. So I went to Columbian Presbyterian Hospital in White Plains. And while I was there, they diagnosed me as suffering with bipolar disorder. And at first, I just was totally in denial. I got very, very angry. I did everything I could to get out of there. I just thought, I said, this is not happening. I mean, you know, they told me I was manic depressive, and I was like, what are you talking about? I said, me? That's just not possible. I did not believe it. And most people really struggle when they are first diagnosed with having any kind of mood or mental disorder. And so after that, I got out of that hospital. And then the mania hit, and I had manic episodes, and all of a sudden I went from depressed, sleeping for hours and days at a time, unable to function, to I could function like I was, it's just like I had an energy boost that was beyond belief. I didn't sleep. All of a sudden I wasn't sleeping. I was up till 2 in the morning. And I get up at 3, 4, or 5 in the morning. I'd get 2-3 hours of sleep a night. I go to work. I would be able to knock out tasks like just one thing after another. Give it to me, give it to me, give it to me. I'll take care of it. And then I had such energy, and also there's thoughts of that you're invincible and you're just on top of the world. With that comes, unfortunately, spending sprees. I just started buying things online, spending thousands of dollars I didn't have on things I didn't need. And the mania was just as bad, because with the mania came alcohol abuse. And I was drinking and drinking and drinking. And when I couldn't get high enough from the drinking, I started buying cough syrup from the pharmacies, which at that time you could buy right off the shelf. You didn't have to get it from behind the counter. This is before the law changed. And I would drink cough syrup all day to get high. And it was horrible. It was horrible. So, again, I crashed, and I had to go back into a mental facility. And this time the crash was really bad, because I had attempted to take my life. When the crash hit, I just felt I did not want to live anymore. I had nothing to live for. Nobody loved me. I didn't love anybody. My children, my wife, family, friends, I felt nothing for anybody. I just felt like an empty shell. And I just no longer wanted to live. I just felt there was absolutely no reason for it. And I tried to overdose myself. Luckily, I was found and brought to a hospital and taken care of. So I went through probably about 5, 6, 7 years of that. And lo and behold, the strangest thing happened, which is strange, but only in the... In the way I say it is because I had a stroke. And in the last 3 years, I've had a stroke, I've had back surgery, and I've been diagnosed with cancer. And with all that, I feel somehow that changed me because I all of a sudden I felt a new outlook on life, that life was a little more precious than I was letting myself believe or think. And all of a sudden, I had this spark that I wanted to live. I wanted to beat the cancer. I did not want to be a cancer statistic, as strange as that sounds. And after the stroke, I wanted to rehab myself back to health. I wanted to run. I wanted to exercise. I wanted to work out. I wanted to swim. It almost gave me a whole new lease on life. And basically, that's where my life turned around, and I've used those tools and many others, especially talking to friends, talking to family and professionals. I cannot stress enough how important it is to talk to not only peers of people who are suffering like yourself, who have a story to share with you, to learn from them, but also to talk to a professional such as yourself. It is so important to talk to people who want to help, have the knowledge how to help, and just have the care and the love for a fellow human being, to just want to help them and see them get better in whatever that may be. But just the will to live, it's just so important to talk to these people.
Yes, and I really agree with what you said, is to make sure you have a team, to speak to a professional, to have friends, to have family, to even go to groups or meetings, to make sure you really reach out. Because I think when you're in the kind of the fits of the depression, the mania, there's times of isolation, of being by yourself, especially when the real depression comes in, of the hopelessness, the helplessness, not wanting to reach out. But it really makes a huge difference to go see that professional, to reach out to a family member or to a friend for support, because I think isolation can be very, very dangerous and almost sink you deeper into that hole of sadness, of despair.
Oh, absolutely. I can't even describe in words how you feel when you are at that point, how alone you feel, how little you feel. You just feel you have no significance in the world, in the universe, to anybody, to yourself. You look out the window, it's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful spring day. It's 60, 70 degrees, the sun is shining. It's just gorgeous, and you feel like it is the most dreary, rainy, dark, foggy day that you could possibly be caught in, and it's scary, it's frightful, and it is lonely is the word. It's, you feel so all alone, and that's when it gets very dangerous. So you're right. Support groups and professionals, family members, anybody that will just take the time to listen and help and care and want to get you help, it is so important to talk to these people.
Yeah. Did this feeling of despair, this loneliness, did it happen slowly? Did it happen quickly? I mean, did you kind of have an idea what's going on? Because some people say it just kind of is so overwhelming and it happens so quickly. And some people say it's kind of that underlying doom and gloom type of just looming feelings and thoughts.
That's I don't mean to be wishy-washy about it, but that's a hard question to answer. Because in the midst of it, you might have days where you actually feel good, and it almost seems like the depression and the sadness and the loneliness, it was a dream, and it never happened. And then you go to bed that night, you wake up the next morning, and you don't want to get out of bed. You don't want to see anybody. You pull the covers over your head. You want to see darkness. You don't want to think. And the more you think, the more painful things become. So it's different, I guess. I could answer it this way. For different mood disorders, I feel it could be different in how it comes on, whether it's suddenly or over a period of time. And then it could be different for each episode that you may roller coaster with. Sometimes it can come on just like bang, it just comes on. And then other times you start feeling, here it comes, you know it's coming, and you feel it's coming, and you know it's coming, and you feel you have no way to stop it, and it's just eventually you're going to hit that bottom again. Then again, there are, in my talking to professionals, psychiatrists and therapists, social workers over my years, it has pretty much been determined, they felt, in their opinion, that I've suffered with this since I'm a child. It just, obviously, in those days, in the 60s and 70s, it wasn't recognized. My family couldn't recognize it. My friends didn't recognize it. Nobody knew what it was. It was like you were labeled quirky, or you were labeled different, or you were, you know, he's eccentric, or he's, you know, he or she is different than others, and they're weird. You know, that's a weirdo, or they're I'm looking for the word, like a rebel, because they're different. They grow their hair longer than most, or they wear different clothes, or they get a tattoo, which was unheard of in those days. So, you know, it's hard to really answer that specifically, but for me, I would say it was more, it took a little bit of time before I really snowballed downhill and hit rock bottom. It came on a little slower. But during some episodes over the years, it came on very quickly.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like a very frightening experience, too, because I think sometimes when you said, when you have a feeling, okay, it's coming, but there's, you know, you kind of get anxious or worried because you don't know how to stop it. You don't know if it can be stopped, and you kind of know what the emotions, what you'll be feeling, what the outcome episode will feel like. And it must be very frightening and a feel of loneliness and helplessness to be able to say, okay, this is coming. And it sounds like it takes years of practice, of seeing professionals, of finding your own coping skills, of exercise, reaching out to others, friends and family, to kind of build yourself back up and build tools, coping skills, tools for yourself to be able to have this kind of in your arsenal to pull out when these days pop up.
You are so right. You couldn't have said it any better. When I was in my darkest times, this is my situation. Everybody's situation is different, but I think there's a basic core of symptoms and the way depression works. Whereas when I would feel, I would go on a daily basis, and I go to work. And I go out to dinner with friends. I go to a concert. My wife and I would do things in the yard, or we have a little pool in our yard. We spend a day out at the pool, listen to the ball game, watch sports on TV with my sons. Those days would come, and it's just like very normal days that probably 80% of the population around here could say they have the same days. And then one day or morning or evening or afternoon, I could never put a finger on what triggered it. If it's something I heard on TV, something I heard on the radio, a certain song, the lyrics, if I saw something happen out and about or read something in the newspaper, or I could never put a finger on what triggered it. And I would start to feel that overwhelming depression, sadness, self-esteem would just start to go out. And that's when it starts to snowball. You start thinking again, what am I doing? Why am I here? What is this worth? What am I giving to society? What value do I have to anybody? And that starts the roller coaster, the car starts to move as if you get on a roller coaster. And when they first start the car, and away it starts going, and you're going up that hill, and you know that the crest is coming, and when it does, it's downhill from there, full speed ahead, and you can do nothing to stop it. You get scared. You get frightened. You get scared. I've cried a million tears just thinking about it and experiencing it, and it is very frightening. It just because you feel there's no outlet, and unfortunately, there are people who come to the point where they feel the only outlet is to take their own life because they can't live with the pain anymore. They can't. Yeah, I heard recently somebody in a group I was in, and there was an email, and they likened the depression to sneezing, and it's as if you would sneeze all day long, every day, for weeks on end, and you get to the point where you just can't sneeze anymore. You just can't do it, and you just want it to end. And unfortunately, and sadly, for some, that is when they end up taking their lives, and that's the most unfortunate thing because it's so avoidable. And you mentioned the tools that I use. I started to get myself healthy. I went to a natural nutritionist, and she put me on a specific diet, had me stop eating foods that are just so bad for me, okay, that are known to affect depression and affect your mood and affect your body, which physically you can have physical ailments that can set you off into depression if you're prone to depression. I also started to exercise. I started working out. I started running. I joined the Greenwich YMCA so I could go on the treadmills and do different classes with them. I started doing yoga. Yoga, I feel, for me, has been just a godsend because I can actually, it's 1 hour, 1+ hour, where I am just focused on me, my thoughts. I am concentrating on doing things that I the poses and just the general overall mood in a room, whether it's a private instructor or you're in a group room. I just feel yoga has enlightened me to so much and to be able to help me control. I mean, there's no cure. And sometimes I go into that yoga class, and I'm as sad as going in as I am when I come out after Namaste. I'm just still depressed. But you know what? I push myself, and I disciplined myself to have to push myself, to think other things, to be distracted from that sadness, because I don't want to feel that way anymore. And I also can say, and I'm remiss that I haven't mentioned this before, which I think is a component so important to fighting depression, is alcohol and drug abuse. I have totally, by choice, decided not to touch alcohol anymore. I do not drink. I do not take any type of drugs that aren't prescribed because I have to take them. I stay away from any substance I can abuse that can help me to all of a sudden want to become manic or depressive again. Alcohol is a depressant, and for people that suffer depression, it's just not good. It is the worst thing you can possibly do.
It becomes self-medicating.
Yeah, I'm not advocating against alcohol use by any means. There are people that drink and can handle it and are very responsible, and it's not a problem. But if you suffer depression, it's any substance abuse is the worst thing you can do for yourself. It'll start you down that road again. So I can't stress enough, if you can, to to just stay away from it. It just think of other things. Just do what I do. I order a club soda with a cranberry. It looks like a drink. Everybody thinks I'm drinking, but it's the best thing I could possibly do for myself.
Yes, and I really appreciate how honest you are with us and the listeners and how genuine you are, because I think it really, you really have painted a picture of what depression, suicide attempt, suicide ideation, almost puts a face to it. Because I find that people, family members, people who've gone through it, don't understand it, don't know why. They want a definite answer. Well, why would you feel this way? What is it? What can we do to fix it? Let's, you know, just as we were speaking before, let's just get over it. Go outside, enjoy the day. Don't. And I think it's not as easy as that. And I think you really explained that it's a lifestyle choice. It's an every minute, every day choice that you make, that I'm going to survive and I'm going to have a better quality of life. And that you're kind of, you say, this is what I'm doing. I'm declaring that I want a better quality of life, and you're working towards it.
Oh, without a doubt. I'm not fooling myself or anybody else if I can't be honest about, you know, what I've gone through, what I go through, and what I feel I need to do for myself to continue to live healthy for people who care about me, et cetera, my dog, who loves me very much. It's just all that has become important again. And it's not all of a sudden that I'm cured or I'm better. I wake up every morning, and one of the tools I use that I've taught myself, that my therapist thinks is just so wonderful, is that I wake up every morning and I find a reason to live that day. Whatever it is, whatever it could be, the most minute thing, it could be I want to read my horoscope and see what it says. It could be I want to make my wife so happy today. It could be I want to go on a trip. I want to see things I've never seen before. It could be I just want to make a cup of coffee and sit and enjoy that cup of coffee and really live in that moment. Anything I can think of, anything I can use, I tell myself, get up, because you have to do this, because believe me, I wake up every day and thoughts are in my head. Why do I bother? Why continue this fight? And it is a fight. It's a fight every day. Depression doesn't go away. It can't be surgically removed. It can't be fixed with medication. It can't be wished away with happy thoughts. It does not go away 24/7. So it is, like you said, it's a fight every day. And you have to find tools. Nothing will cure it. Yoga doesn't cure it. Happy thoughts doesn't cure it. Medication doesn't cure it. Meditation doesn't cure it. Nothing cures it, but they are tools that you can use from moment to moment, hour to hour, day to day, to help yourself want to live that day and want to feel a little bit better, even if you're feeling down. You know what? But a little bit better, a little bit better is better than not better at all. It's just so simple. You know, not every day is good, but there is good in every day.
I like that. And I think it's finding the small stuff, finding those moments of peace, having a laugh about something, just being able to allow yourself for 1 minute or 1 moment to enjoy something and to be able to kind of treasure that and keep those moments with you to say, okay, you know, I laughed today. That was really great. And being able to kind of move forward, because I think sometimes, you know, the media, things you see on television, everything paints a picture how we're supposed to be, that everybody's happy and smiling and walking down the street and everybody's so happy. And I think in reality, day by day, we all have struggles. We all have things going on. You know, as I say, don't judge a book by its cover. Everybody has something going on. And I think to remember that for our listeners, you're not alone. please, you know, don't give up. You're not alone. You do matter. You do have an impact. You impact other people's lives. It's so important. I think also I work with some family members who are survivors, and it's such an impact. And, you know, I think so many times people are like, could I have done something? How would I have known? It's tough. I think, I mean, it's a tough call, but, I mean, it's just such a hard legacy to leave behind. So I would say, you know, don't give up, to keep doing, you know, especially what you're doing and what you're saying, and to have the hope that, you know, this is going to happen. I am going to start to feel a little bit better and to enjoy life a little bit.
Absolutely, Alexa. You couldn't have said it. I couldn't have said it any better than you just said it. You said it perfectly. I like to tell myself I want to live with passion, compassion, love, and service. That, to me, will help me survive this depression every day. Those four things, if I can do one of them, two of them, three of them, or all four of them every day, it brings me to the next day. It does bring me to the next day. It helps me. It fuels me. And that's what, unfortunately, people... You know, if you're struggling, you need to fuel that fire. You need to almost get angry at yourself for being angry, for being sad, for being depressed, for being... You almost have to get angry at yourself and fight yourself and then push. It's easier said than done, but I've done it, so it can be done. So I'm saying it because it can be done. I have done it. I feel that I do not make any try to fool myself that tomorrow I might not wake up and I'm in a bad place. I'm in a really bad place and I need help. But that's the thing, I've learned to go get help. And people out there, if you're struggling, if you feel alone and you feel this and you're embarrassed and you have that. The stigma that's out there about mental illness is getting better. Awareness is really being brought to the forefront, but there's still such a stigma about people that suffer. You know, it's people just don't understand when somebody, you know, is angry and they act out at you, you know, and you say, well, what's wrong with that person? What are they, crazy? Well, you know what? I hate to say crazy, but, yeah, maybe they are. Maybe they are different. Maybe they do suffer something. So, you know what? Take it in stride. Come a break. Okay? Maybe instead of yelling back, reach out a hand and say, can I help you with something? Are you feeling okay? What's the worst thing they're going to do is fluff you off or something? You're in that situation. Reach out a hand. You might be surprised that they reach theirs back and say, help me. You can help me. I need help. You know, it doesn't hurt it's so easy to turn away another human being or to fight them or push them away or act like they don't matter. It's a lot harder, but it's a lot more satisfying if you try to help them.
Yes. That's why I think what you're doing is so amazing, that you're telling your story so people can relate to it. Because I can make a bet there's tons of listeners right now saying, that's exactly how I feel. I thought I was the only person that felt that way. I thought something was wrong with me, that I'm weak, or why can't I get over this myself? Why can't I just snap out of it? And you get stuck in those negative thoughts and that negative monologue, and that you kind of bring yourself down and down. And to be able to hear someone is going through what you're going through. Someone understands. Someone is there. It's a hope. It's that light at the end of the tunnel. And I think that's always, we want to make sure, see that light at the end of the tunnel. Even if you don't believe it right away, name that light at the end of the tunnel and keep your eyes on that focus, because it's very important. And also helping other people. I tell a lot of people, you know, clients and family members, just a kind word. Just to listen to someone. You don't have to fix their problem. You don't have to make their pain go away. You don't have to come up with an answer. But just saying, wow, that sounds really painful. I'm sorry you feel that way. Can move mountains can actually be the deciding choice of someone not taking their life or not.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. And I can't stress enough that if you're out there and you're struggling and you feel alone and the people around you are not supporting you or most likely they just don't understand. They don't understand and they're scared. They're scared as you are. They're just as frightened as you because they don't understand what's going on. They're in denial or cannot believe that their son, daughter, husband, uncle, sister, brother, wife, whomever, friend, is suffering like this. And they don't want to believe it. I've sat in many groups where parents, their child's been diagnosed as bipolar, a teenager, a preschool or younger, or in their college years, and the parents just don't believe it. I mean, they come right out and they just say that they just think the child's acting out, the child's looking for attention, things like that. And you're sitting right there, and they're sitting right in front of the child and saying this to them. And what I found is, in most cases, the parents are just as scared as the child, and the parents are just, unless they're just so narcissistic, they really don't care about their own child. They basically are just frightened, and they cannot believe that their child has been diagnosed this way and is acting out this way and is struggling and is in danger. You know, like I said, when I was first diagnosed, I didn't believe them. I didn't believe a word the doctors were saying to me. I said, you people are just because I'm in a psychiatric ward. This is what you tell people. That's what I told them. You tell people they're crazy because this is what you do. This is your living. And they were not crazy. They were on the money. They were on the money. And if I could go back and apologize to them for the way I acted and what I said to them, I would do that. I would absolutely apologize to them and tell them that thank you so much because, you know, you basically probably set me on a path to saving my life.
Yeah. And I think that's where mental illness has to come up on the same page as any other medical condition. You know, same thing when someone finds out, you know, as cancer or they have diabetes or lupus or something. People are like, no, I don't have that. No, never. And you go through that denial and you go through that. And I think, you know, to have people realize that it is a very tough thing to get any type of diagnosis or have any type of condition and to be able to treat them all, medical, psychiatric, as, you know, with the same empathy, with the same feeling, with saying, okay, this is something that we can work on. This is something that's acceptable. And it's nobody's fault. There's no right or wrong. It is what it is. Where can we move from here? How can we move forward? How can we make things, you know, tolerable and livable, and how do we utilize and develop coping skills?
Yeah, you're so right. It's a disease. It's a disease like any other disease, like MS, like cancer, like lupus, like ALS, any you name it, diabetes. Mental illness is a disease, and it needs to be to recognize that way. And unfortunately, in our healthcare system today and with the stigma, it's not recognized that way. Health insurance companies don't want to cover a lot of mental illnesses. And for people to go actually get good quality help is very difficult. It's sad. There are people out there, there are probably more people walking around undiagnosed than diagnosed. Not probably, there are. There are more people walking every day up and down the street, like you said before, that are struggling, that are not diagnosed, and because nobody has been able to recognize it in them, they haven't been able to recognize it, or they just can't go and get any quality help for somebody to help them. And it's sad. It's very sad because these people could live much better quality of life, and they don't. And it's so sad that, but if someone has cancer,
They go into the hospital. They get And I'm not belittling cancer by any means. Believe me, I've had it, so I'm not belittling it at all. But a perfect example is like you mentioned, the Out of Darkness walk that you attended for me, and I thank you again. And to we do these. There's one walk a year with the AFSP, and we had, which was phenomenal, we had 717 registered walkers, which was, the numbers were astounding. I mean, I think the year before we had about 150. So it was just a huge success. But then I went to the breast cancer walk a few weeks later for my sister-in-law, and there were about 8,000, 9,000 people. And that's a curable disease.
It's
mental illness is not a curable disease. So you see the imbalance of the awareness. It's just the awareness. There's so many people that are aware, and so many. There are more people affected by mental illness than by breast cancer. But there are 700 walkers for mental illness, and there is suicide prevention, and there are 9,000 walkers for breast cancer. And that's not, again, I am not in any way, shape, or form comparing one to the other as far as that. I'm just saying that's the difference in the awareness. The awareness for mental illness is nowhere near where it needs to be.
I agree. My dad had passed years ago from lung cancer, and you know, they're getting more research with lung cancer now. But he would say, you know, not putting down breast cancer, all the wonderful work they do with breast cancer, but he actually said once when he was passing, before he passed, he said, "I don't think lung cancer is sexy. There's no sexy T-shirts. There's no sexy, you know, it's not, I think media is not that interested in it. It's not that, you know, alive and people, you know, it's not that cliche great thing to get involved in." He said, "I wish people would be more with all these diseases, with all cancer, with mental illness, that it's about really, you know, the cause." And, you know, I know there's stigma, there's people not understanding it. You know, that's okay, but I think it's being able to go there and really showing the support and knowing that you have an impact of saving people's lives. When I went to that walk, I was so taken back by the groups, and everybody had their own T-shirts with photos, with names of people they lost. One person had two family members. I think there were two brothers or two cousins that both died of suicide, and all these young kids whose family members who had committed suicide, older people whose young children committed suicide. It was such a very powerful bonding walk, and it was there was a silence, but there was definitely this solidarity there, and this strength that I said, wow, this is really, people are able, even in their pain and sorrow, people are stepping out and they're making a difference. And people are being heard and seen, and suicide is really getting a great awareness from those walks. It was a very powerful walk, and I know sometimes people don't. It's a hard topic, and it's, so you don't want to kind of go around it. It's not a comfortable topic, but I think it's something. As I always say, it's better to be safe than sorry.
Yeah, it is. It is powerful, and it's different from most walks that you see. Because even though there are smiles and there are exchanges of caring and of support for one another, but there's also that underlying very, very emotional sadness and hardship. And you can see it on some of the people's faces that it's they get a moment of happiness because of the support from family members and team members, and like you said, some people get a T-shirt together, and they have a saying and things like that, and they try to raise funds for AFSP through their team and different things, and it's there, that camaraderie and that bond is there, but yet you see that tinge, that teardrop coming down a mother's face. It's very sad.
Yeah. It's very sad. And you had sent me some facts about suicide and depression that I really wanted to read, because I think sometimes really getting the facts of what's going on Over 38,000 people in the U.S. die by suicide every year. In 2010, the highest suicide rate was among people 45 to 64 years old. The second highest rate occurred in those 85 years and older. Currently, suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. A person dies by suicide about every 13.7 minutes in the U.S. An attempt is estimated to be made once every minute. I mean, that is just thinking, as we've been on the phone right now, there's been about 43, 44 attempts.
Yeah, that's...
And two or three completed.
Yeah. It's very sad. It's very sad because, to me, it's senseless. It doesn't have to happen. It can be stopped. It can be abated by awareness, by support groups, and by this. What you're doing here is just such a phenomenal thing. This is such a great outlet for awareness this way, that people will listen to this, hear this, and it's a domino effect. The more people hear the message, the more they relay the message, and you know how that works. It's just law of numbers. It's just people getting the word out. And if AFSP is, as far as they're concerned, they want to get the suicide rate down. I think it's to I have my facts or figures here. They want the suicide rate to reduce it to 20% by 2025, and that's a great goal, because if only 20% of people that attempt unfortunately are able to complete what their goal is, unfortunately that's saving a lot of lives. It's really saving a lot of lives, and it can be done. But it is amazing what you said. I mean, the attempts is what really stands out to me.
Yes, the cries for help and the pain.
Yeah, an attempt a minute. That's somebody that's crying out for help, and more than likely suffers a mental disorder.
Yes.
90% of suicide attempts and people who die by suicide are people who suffer a mental disorder. Only 10% are people that don't.
It's such an astounding number. What can we, the listeners, us, the community, do to help the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention? How can we contact the foundation? How can we find out about events, offer services, offer help, anything?
Well, obviously, the best thing you can do is go to the website, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, .org. If you go on their website, they have all the information that possibly you could want to read about. And there's from suicide warning signs to coping with suicide loss, if you've had a loss in your family, how to cope with it, who to reach out to help you, groups that you can go to. There's a site, part of on the site that you can learn about understanding suicide, what basically is the cause of it, and why people that suffer, take this action when all else fails. There's things about advocacy and public policy and all the walks, the Out of Darkness walks, the Hike for Hope, which will be coming up in next May. I'm so excited because the next May's Hike for Hope, which they hold at FDR Park, is on my birthday, so really.
Oh, what a great gift.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I say, of all the gifts I could get, that's the best one. I can go help somebody struggling and help raise awareness and just be there for somebody that day. That's, to me,
keep everything else. That'll fulfill me. So that's a reason I have to get up and live tomorrow. So and every day going forward till May 2nd, when it's on my birthday. So, but again, there's things about the research. There's where the money goes. If you give, if you want to make a donation to them, where the money goes to where it goes for research, where it goes for groups, for the different programs that there are available for people who are struggling that they can seek out. There's all kinds of news. So the best thing to me would be to go to American Foundation for Suicide Prevention.org. I would not recommend surfing the net about suicide, putting in any the word suicide or anything like that, because you're going to get a lot of misinformation. And unfortunately, you're going to get a lot of information that someone who's struggling might think is romanticized or you know, ideologized, like you said. And mm-hmm. I would stay away from just surfing. If you want, go to our website, and believe me, there's everything and anything you could possibly want. And if not, you can contact them. They'll be glad.
Yeah, and I'll definitely put the website up on my page. I have a Facebook page, Insight into Healing. So
yeah.
I will definitely put it up there. And if any listeners have any questions, you can always send them to insightintohealing@gmail.com. So we can definitely keep that, because I think this is definitely a community. This is definitely an ongoing outreach back and forth that I feel that we really, you know, to be in touch with the community and have access to also give them these tools and research for them to help themselves, to help others.
Yeah, absolutely. And let me add, Alexa, you can always, if you're struggling, you don't know where to go, you can call the suicide prevention hotline, and that number is 1-800-273-TALK. 1-800-273-8255. And they have just wonderful people on the phones that you can talk to. They're wonderful. They're wonderful. And they will get you the help you need. If you just call them, they're there to listen. They are like a family member. They will listen. They will talk to you. They will help you. And I can't say enough to, if you're struggling, call that hotline. They'll get you the help you need. And if that means they have to send professionals to help you, medical services, whatever, it will be done. I can't stress it enough.
Something not to take light. I think if you're having suicidal thoughts, I think it's not something to take lightly. Not to scare anybody, but I think it's something, as I tell parents or I tell family members or the person who's suffering, I like to go to a scale from 1 to 10, 1 not acting on it, 10 acting on it. Where are you on that scale? Do you have a plan? Do you have access to your plan, pills, whatever that you have the plan for? Has there been attempts in the past? Is there alcohol or drugs involved? I'm also looking for, is that person not enjoying the activities that they usually like to do? If they used to like to go to the gym, now they're not going to the gym. Are they giving away personal belongings? Are they not? Are they isolating? Are they shutting down? I think those are really, really big warning signs. And I would, you know, if you're feeling those thoughts or you're feeling you have a family member, I would call, you know, go to the emergency room, call 911. I think it's very serious to catch someone before anything happens. I always say be better safe than sorry. It's a serious thing, and it's not meaning that you're weak, that you can't get through these feelings on your own. I always say a team effort. I live by my advice. I have a team effort. I have a team behind me. I always advocate for people to get a team. There's power in numbers. It doesn't
Absolutely.
Mean you're weak, and it doesn't mean you can't do it yourself, but it's so amazing to have a team. It has so amazing to be able to have like a sounding board to speak to someone that you trust and be able just to say, okay, this is what I'm going through. Because, you know, we're all human. We all go through ups and downs. We're sad. We're upset. We're angry. So we should all be here to really support each other.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. My theme for this whole segment here, talking to you, and I know your theme is right there with me. It's seek help, please. Just seek help. Don't try to fight this yourself. You don't have to. There's no reason to. And that's the biggest thing that we can message, we can get out to people out there that are struggling with whatever it may be, anxiety. It doesn't have to be bipolar depression. It doesn't have to be manic depression. It doesn't have to be schizophrenia. It doesn't have to be suicidal thoughts. It doesn't have to be that. It can be something you can't help yourself, and you're feeling down and you're beginning to spiral. It can be the beginning. So seek help. Ask somebody. Call somebody. Call that number. Call anybody. They'll be glad to help you. And there's MHA of Westchester. They're a wonderful, wonderful group. They do wonderful work with people that are suffering depression. Call them. They have the people that can help. They have people that will listen, that will help. They just want to help. That's all they do. That's all they want to do is help. And they want to see you live, and they want to see you get better and live a healthier life, whatever that may be, but a healthier life and to continue your life. That's all these people want.
Yes, and that's all we want, too. So please, any listeners out there, please send in questions. Please reach out if you need any more information. And, Greg, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. I know we've helped so many people and really changed a lot of lives tonight. I can feel it. It was such a great show.
Oh, thank you so much, Alexa. I really appreciate you having me. I appreciate you giving me this opportunity. And you're right. I'm just hoping that even if one life gets saved from this show in this hour, that's better than none at all. So if one gets saved, that's one more.
It's all worth it. One more person
help.
To stand up.
Yeah. Can I just say one thing before we sign off?
Sure.
I just want to say I saw this quote on Facebook, actually, and I really thought it was very pertinent. Just remember, suicide does not end the chances of life getting worse. Suicide eliminates the possibility of life getting better. So keep that in your thoughts, everybody. When if you're struggling and you're thinking of it, or you have any of these thoughts, keep that in your mind. Your life won't get. It doesn't stop life from being worse, but it will not ever have a possibility of getting better.
Yeah, and there's a great life will get better, and just to have the hope. Well, thank
Without
you, everyone, so much. Yeah. Thank you so much for listening tonight. The song that started the show was Every Good Thing by The Afters, and it will be the song that takes us out tonight. Everybody, good night, and God bless.